but we are very blessed that we won't have any difficult issues. Under the educational matters, as I mentioned, the council has to be involved according to the Act to advise institutions regarding training of natural sciences. A Dean's of Science Forum was established, and we do have some difficulty with this because amongst the academic fraternity there is a big perception that there is actually no need to register. Academics don't have to register, but in practice you have to register in terms of the Act. But they of course influence future scientists that will do their work. Admission requirements under admission, we're busy with an extensive database to capture what is in South Africa now under national science training in order to assist our registration committees and education committee with the deliberations. And in terms of that, we also have to advise higher education institutions in terms of the Act as well, where we see shortcomings and we're in the process of doing that. The collaboration with the Higher Education Qualification Committee is at the stage now where we have a draft agreement, a memorandum of understanding. And I understand, or at least our understanding at this stage, is that the Engineering Council is the only council at this stage that has entered into an official agreement, and we hope that we might be the second or in the next group at least, so that we can assist higher education in that way. Then, many local and foreign qualifications to be evaluated is an ongoing thing. We also see an increase in the number of foreign qualifications to be evaluated by non-South Africans looking for employment. The finances, there is an audited statement which is included in the annual report. For the last 3 years, again, we have increased and improved our situation. However, we believe that when the accreditation starts with our collaboration with the HEQC, we will have to become more expensive. The registration numbers increase is really the main reason for the increase. And we have been able to keep our expenditure down over 3 years, which we believe very conservatively in a way, but we have been able to cut down on the expenses and the income increase substantially more than what the expenses increase. That is just a brief summary that perhaps for the honorable members just on what we have over the last 3 years achieved there and what is really not the most critical thing, but there is a surplus and we have a view in our council that the purpose of this council is not to build up a fat bank balance, it is there to, when the money comes, to spend the money to promote the profession. However, it was important for us just to build up some sort of a reserve from which to work from. And at the end of the period, the term of office for myself and Dr. Iwala, which will end somehow second half next year, that the council at least would have some financial basis to work from and to build their future activities from there. But the income increased again by 14%, while the expenses, you would notice, is 0.3%, which has been a very, very moderate increase there. In 2005, when we were elected, the council finished with the deficit, and that is unfortunately being turned around now. Under registration stats, a steady increase over the last 4 years, continuing even in the last year. However, we are still concerned about the relatively few registered black and female scientists. The minister, in response to our report, has made the same comment that he would also like to see particularly female scientists increase. We have in our structures of committees, we are trying to involve more female scientists in the committees also to make sure that we are more represented there. The registration statistics, just as a summary, we now have 3,400 in total people registered, which we still find difficult to establish the real number of potential natural scientists in South Africa. We have mentioned this before, but we also see with SA statistics, when the census was done, they would ask for medical practitioners, they would ask for engineers, technicians, but there is not a category for natural sciences, and that makes it difficult for us to actually obtain a reliable statistics from them. This is just a summary of some of the most important perhaps numbers that we are seeing. The orange, the large part of that pipe chart there is the professional scientists, which is what we would like to see being the most. The candidate scientists is small, the second smallest chip there, or size of it. That number varies up and down as the candidates become scientists. And some this last year, we actually had a clean-up process there because there were a number of candidates who remained candidates for way beyond the 3 years. So they all would have been, and we've tried to clean up there to reduce that. The age distribution is still reasonable to us. However, the younger group, 20 to 29, the 6% seems to be very stable, and 25% between 30 and 39. And we know that in other offices and departments too, there is a concern about the aging of scientists. We do not see a change in the pattern with our legislation, although there are now, it appears, hopefully some more young people also resist. The qualification is the majority of people there on your right-hand side, the biggest slice, 38%, have got a four-year degree, which is perfectly normal, and very similar anywhere else in the world. Although we can see the number of doctors, 306, masters, 26, and we do know that DST in particular has a drive to increase the number of PhDs in the country, and we hope that it will be reflected here as inclusiveness. The gender distribution, the smaller blocks in the front, the purple ones are for female, and here you will see the tendency that under the natural sciences, 82% are male, but the certificate and candidate, which is the route to go into it, the number of female sciences actually increase. And what is perhaps most exciting is the candidate scientists, which is the next stage of registration, 51% are female. So clearly is on the improvement there. The grade distribution is also still some concern in the white blocks the white registered science. And again, you will notice that the middle group there, the candidate scientists, where the number of tax signs is now 9% compared to 53% white, 6%. And 2% plus has been the number of non-white doctors as scientists, one may say, is increasing. The lack of capacity in our office only has 4 people at this moment in time. But then, Mr. Honourable Member, we appreciate when we have an income of $1.5 million. We cannot compare with the Engineering Council, which has 10,000 members, and they charge a registration fee of well over R1,000 per person. And our fees are less than half that, and we only have 3,000 registered members. Scientists are reluctant to register, we hope that next year we will have a major capacity drive to make known the fact that it is compulsory to register in spite of other efforts that we have had. But a major campaign in the newspapers are going to cost some money, but it appears that the DST is going to support us with that, and the indications are there in some discussions with the Director General. The volunteer associations also very slow in getting involved, and in terms of the act, they have to advise us, we have to listen to them, and we would like to do that. And we have great difficulty getting them all on board, and the reason why we have appointed this consultant to assist, and the consultant is a retired scientist who understands the profession, and she is working on this now. Some academics are quite negative, particularly myself and Dr. Kiwala are both deans and faculties, and we find that our colleagues are not very positive about the fact that there have to be a body for legislation for scientists. includes even an excellent scientist, I mentioned that. Non-compliance with some government departments, we have received this in writing, and we have discussion with the department, but not all departments outside the Department of Science and Technology would award contracts to people that are not political scientists, and we believe that's really unfair. And then the marketing is really where the major issue is. And it has been an issue. We have a relatively small office and not really the market culture person. And the honorable chair, this is the last point. What we have found now is they have what we would call volunteerism. All the people that should be on our committee are so busy, particularly academics like ourselves, that are institutions where there are mergers, institutions that have merged, and everybody else is so busy that they find little time to volunteer time, and it really makes the task of the council sometimes quite difficult to do, but we have to deal with along with that.
I'd like to thank you very much, thanks for the input. I said that we're going to take the next presentation right away. But just before we exchange identity, points of clarity, before we get to the discussion, maybe you'll finish that with the professor has shown us. If you want us to check something on us,
The Voluntary Association, coming from an engineering background, it was mandatory, and I'm just wondering why one is sitting with this, dilemma which faces you about people not wanting to register, and that shouldn't be mandatory in terms of all of the degree process.
Thank you for the question. It would solve that the Act now says what used to be called before 2003, were learned societies that are described in the voluntary associations, and they may voluntarily associate with the council. So they are voluntary. But registration is compulsory. There is no question. If you act, you practice, you have to be registered. And our council in the last year have now laid two charges against people that we were informed are practicing and not registered, and we hope that a court case would maybe be a wake up call.
Anything else? Maybe this should come up afterwards. Can I say at the time of this legislation, the CI was in very much against it and wouldn't register, and up to today I have not registered and have no intention whatsoever to register. I was told then I couldn't practice. Well, for me to publish a paper abroad, they never asked me a question like that. I was the little paper that is that. And it is a status and whatever that people were granted at the time. We had a hangover fight over this legislation with Marjorie Piles. And the point is simply that I did not register even right now.
Okay, can you take the last comment?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I was wondering what is the fee to register? Is it tax deductible? Because I think the engineering fee is not tax deductible. And shouldn't we from Science and Technology try and approach this differently? Because we need to get people registered. And then I think they should come back to us and say, there is a need for them to do this without having to pay for it, because South Africa needs to know who the scientists are and where they are. Once they qualify, it's like a driver's license. You should be able to drive on the roads. And once you pay once as a registration fee, you should have an annual subscription. Maybe government should grant them that annual subscription. If there's anything that we need to do for the government, I think we should hear from Professor Nareg what his opinions are.
It's not that what you get another one later, but just to get your appetite of what is done. Have you been responsible for that one later?
Yeah. It would be, I think, wonderful for the scientists if the government would pay their fees. Whether this is feasible, I'm not entirely sure. There needs to be some, I think, activity or input or sacrifice from the scientist's point of view too. Now, whether it is not tax deductible, there used to be but the Minister of Finance has changed that about 2 years ago. It's no longer tax deductible even for HR. No professional fee is tax deductible. Perhaps the board will be.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. And it's got a good name.
So for 8 months,
there wasn't ever a counting of the same place. They were making 10 hours exist for the better part of the last place. However, general is issued a disclaimer with regards to what he says, annual financial statements for the past year. And the basis of the disclaimer were insufficient internal controls, the preparation of the annual financial statements in accordance with CAP and GRAP, but the issue around assets and lack of proper controls in this regard. And the Auditor General found that the validity and accuracy of completeness of sales and other income had problems as well as the location of our debtors. So nevertheless, there are a number of achievements, particularly in the area of publication. We're able to maintain accreditation of our journal, the Africa Insights. We invested in software to ensure that the issues around plagiarism that have suffered in a number of institutions did not plague us. We issued four. There were four issues of Africa Insights published, there were four books that we also published. And we had a number of high-level conferences and seminars. There was a social science conference hosted together with the Human Sciences Research Council. We hosted the Vice President of Sudan toward the end of November last year. And we also hosted a peacekeeping conference in the last month of the previous financial year. The Minister appointed a new council at the beginning of this year. The Council has instituted a number of committees, the Executive Committee, the Audit Committee, the Research Committee, as well as Human Resources and Finance Committee. The Audit Committee, particularly in view of the Auditor General's findings, has undertaken to meet monthly to try and ensure that the budget recovery plan that has been committed will restore to normalcy during the course of this financial year. With regards to financial management, as we've indicated, there is an audit recovery plan, and we are hoping to ensure that there is unwavering compliance to the Public Finance Management Act and relevant federal regulations. Internal auditors were appointed at the end of February this year. We are undertaking a process of revamping of IT infrastructure, also improving security of books, the library books in particular, have improving assets, security of assets, a library books where we have a holding of over 70,000 documents. We're also in the process of developing a fair screen income strategy to avoid over reliance on our parliamentary board. In terms of moving forward, there has been an acting CEO from the beginning of February until August this year. We took over on the 1st of September, so we've actually just been in office for about 2 months. We have a new chief financial officer starting the after tomorrow. We're also in the process of filling senior and middle management posts. We are in the process of shortlisting for most of these posts and hope that by the end of this calendar year, we'll have most people on the staff complement on board with us. We've also instituted a number of governance structures within the organization to ensure that there's collective responsibility and also accountability. In terms of financial management, Chair, we've spoken about the audit recovery plan. It has a number of highlights, and we have committed to the Council that by the end of November this year, we would have gotten back to them to indicate a number of issues that they have put together in turn around strategies that we need to ensure that they're undertaking. We also are instituting a monitoring and evaluation system to ensure that we can track progress, but also shortfalls and be able to take remedial actions in advance. We have also undertaken a market policy framework, and this is looking at the number of areas where there were gaps, where there were no policies, or where there might have been policies, the policies were old, just to ensure that indeed the internal control issues that the General has spoken about can be dealt with. We've agreed with the General that we're going to take an interim project. To try and test our systems of control and other issues that are interesting. There is a process of also looking at our research strategy. In May this year, the research team, where we begin to look at our research agenda and also looking at issues of collaboration with other research institutes and not over the line
one of the steps that we did in our ESET and water access. We also developed a quality management system to try and improve the quality and veracity of our research, in particular issues of peer review, and ensuring that, that we test our research against that done in other institutions. But I think the research quality here of the cancer, which closely with us with regards to this particular matter. There is also an annual impact assessment that we intend to undertake with regards to the relevance of our research output, and here we would constitute a committee of external stakeholders who would assist us in this process. We're also looking at, you know, the issues that we have raised of us bringing in research associates, research fellows, and developing linkages with a number of other institutions, both within South Africa and outside the country, to help us with increasing our research output. Chair, with regard to compliance with pertinent legislation, a number of these, particularly under the human resource area, are skills development and permanent equity. Where we're looking at finalizing the next skills, workplace skills plan, looking at employment equity issues, particularly the balance between males and females, and also race distribution, but also looking at areas of people who might have disabilities that we could have. I think with regards to access to information act, this is a requirement for all of us, and we try to see the requirements of this act. And then certainly issues around supply chain management, performance management, and looking at existing costs, particularly the finance that we have to adhere to. We also, with our major shareholder, which is the Department of Science and Technology, are looking at ensuring that the shareholder contract that we've signed with them, we not only meet but hope to exceed the targets. We're looking at inculcating a culture of excellence and performance in the organization. Looking at scanning the attrition rates and ensuring that we improve the organizational culture and environment in our ESA so that we can retain people for longer periods, and hope that we will avoid a qualification in this financial year, but also improve the stakeholders' perception of us. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Michael. I frankly don't want to say to a new CEO who comes to give out these dreams. But thanks for the presentation, Professor Odia. Did you conduct that interview? Exit interviews with different men. What answers did you see? And what are they saying? Why were they leaving? We just give us an understanding of that situation.
Chair, I had gone through a very turbulent time in the last 3 years. It's not just last, you know, this last financial year. There was a lot of instability, and the sustainable CEO at that time actually left under a cloud, so to speak. So the exodus you are seeing is the result of that instability, where the organization was not well run. As you can see, there are lots of problems. We are picking the pieces really as a new kind. So it's just the fallout of a long-standing unstable situation.
So where did this happen? You're not here.
Yes, no, I was not, I wasn't the previous council yet. Together with Professor Lattes, we were in the previous council. Yes, Chair Wolf. It was a very difficult.
So you had this trust?
I wouldn't say, Chair, I tried my part. I tried my part, but I think the work of the chairperson, I think, is still not in this case, the previous
one. It was good.
Okay. Okay. I would like to thank the MUSI for an open and transparent report. The Institute is clearly facing huge challenges and difficulties. None of your problems are hidden. They're there for us to examine, and they're there for us to come together and assist you to rectify the problem. I'm especially happy that steps are being taken to address the Auditor General's report. I think you very, very correctly have hit on the importance of the audit committee. That audit committee is the driving engine of proper financial management. And I noted that in the last financial year, despite the crisis, the financial crisis, which gave rise to the Auditor General's report, but that committee only met four times in the financial year. So I am happy that you tell us they are now going to meet on a monthly basis until things are being properly managed. Also happy that internal auditors have been appointed, because that is another highlight of the Auditor General's concerns about the financial position at the Institute. I believe that Auditor General's report must be used as a checklist. Everything's are all listed, the problems are all listed, and those are the things over the next few months that the Institute needs to work on to rectify. So you don't become serial defaulting. Because last year also, you did not have a really good Auditor General's report. In fact, I believe it was a qualified report last year. If my information is correct, the previous year too, there were some certain qualifications. We can't allow this to happen to a person. And I think that perhaps we need a fuller report, a more detailed report from the Institute as the steps that you can take to get a clean bill of health next year. And I think we must monitor their activities and their program in that regard very closely. I don't want to go into the details of the Auditor General's report except for one item, and that is dark loans. Now, those common factors in the private sector are to borrow money. But I'm a bit surprised what's happening in those institutions funded by the government. I would have thought that if a member of staff or anybody else wants to borrow money, he goes down the road to his local bank and does so. So in this regard, I want to know who these members of staff are receiving these loans, what their positions are, what is the amount of the loan, what period are these loans to be repaid, what interest rate has been charged, if anything, has a credit check been undertaken regarding the people receiving loans, and are there any bad debts that are associated with this policy of lending money to members of staff? You may not be able to cover all these details now, but in due course, I would like to proceed with that information. Just one final question regards professional publications. Now, your core function is research. Yet I can't see, reading through the report, any monitoring of the quality of your research. If there is, you must please point it out to me. I would have thought that one way of monitoring the quality of research is to have things actually published. Now, again, I may be into the situation indirectly, but I reckon of 100 pieces of research which are identified here, of about 100 pieces of research, none have been published internationally. 8 have been published in Insight and one of the other publications associated with the Institute. 77 have not been published. 6 have been published online. I'm not sure what that means, if that really counts as publication. Perhaps you can just expand on what you mean by online publication. But the way I'm reading the situation, and you must correct me if I'm wrong, is that there is very, very poor publication of research. And I ask myself then the question, what is the point of doing research? All that work, what happens to it then? It's not going to be published. Because publication is also one way of assessing the value of the research. So check those off. If there's another round, the other questions, so those are my main questions.
Thank you. Let's take some comments on that. This process we have to check. I'm looking at Mr. Mogo, Aylan, Max, Rashi, Professor Mohammed, Network of Resistance. Is it the end of the
thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me respond to the issue of loans. The honorable member is quite correct. There is a lot in the business of giving loans, and you should never have given any loans. To my knowledge, there was only one person who was offered a loan outside the policy framework of finance. It was a loan of about 20,000 rand, if I remember. And we now have measures to make him pay the loan. I cannot give details in terms of the kinship and so on. But this is part of the fallout of the previous CEO, who had to leave. It's just one example of the kind of lack of control that we had there. But we are not in the business of giving loans, and we will not, we will never do that. It was just one instance, which we discovered and we testified.
Thank you. It is indeed the case that research is one of the core functions of ISTA, and for that reason we have also set new targets for publishing work.
But I think we should just keep in mind
there are two functions. The one is the publishing of research. The other is research for policy formulation purposes. And you'll see in the report there is a huge activity of making accessible and disseminating research that's been done in other ways than just in publishing in journals and other forms of the usual academic format. And that is because of the other goal of ISTA, or the obligation to provide information and research that will inform policy for formulation. But to come back to the publication side of it, I think I share your concern, and that is why the new research policy sets specific targets to our publishers. I can assure you that our researchers, that it goes through the normal peer review system, and all of them comply with the normal academic criteria. But we've also just published or advertised for a new position for an executive director of research because of the importance of the research made of ISTA, and we hope that this will also in due course provide us with a stronger publication record as far as that is concerned.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to thank ISTA for having the woman, Chairperson. If you would allow me, Chairperson, to let's start with natural sciences and say, in fact, ISTA would respond to this one as well. What incentive do you have to attract black women? What incentives do you have? And I heard you talking even about people with disabilities. Do you have any incentives to attract them? And natural sciences, would you share with us by saying non-compliance of government departments? Exactly what I was going to ask. What do you mean by that, and what I was going to ask? And natural sciences, do you have anything to do or to address the issues of IDF? ISTA? You are getting funding from DST. Is there any funding or donation or contribution from other countries in Africa that you work with, or you do research for or with? And what is your contribution to DISA in South Africa? And DDG, DST, once upon a time, last year, I heard that ISTA was between DST and Foreign Affairs. Where are we as far as that is concerned today?
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The statement about the government departments is that we have been informed by members and we have seen that government departments would put out tenders and they would not insist that the scientists that take part are registered. In other words, non-registered scientists often would get to do the work. And we have been cautioned by this even by our minister's office at one stage. And then the second question, if I get it right, Honorable Chair, was about IKS, Indigenous Knowledge Systems. Is that correct? Thank you. No, we're not really involved in that at this stage, I have to admit. We have no interaction or involvement in that at all at this stage. Our main function is this, or main drive at this stage, is to try to get the act in place and compliance and people registered and qualifications. So it has not been on our agenda, I have to admit.
Thank you.
Honorable Chair, yes, women, we do have a drive to get more registered members, registered scientists. We have also lost some of our female council members, and Professor Agude sitting there in front is a good example, who was in our council and resigned because of other business. There were two quite prominent women in our council that resigned. The other was, she was the chair of the Agriculture Committee. Very competent, but we have lost, but we have got some young women in our council now that we are engaging in subcommittees. Dr. Rosaleka is one that comes to mind, that we're trying to engage in the council activities. When our term of office is over, we hope that they are going to take over.
And just going on incentives
to provide for any other incentives? Honorable Chair, unfortunately, we haven't got the finances to provide incentives. We are just actively driving a recruitment to ensure more women registering. Also, when the council is elected, it's a prerogative of the minister to elect the council from nominations received, but they involve us in this, and we are trying to, when the nominations come, we try to get more women on the council rather than men.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Safe to say that the issue of attracting more women, particularly women with disabilities, is something that we just begin to apply our minds to ensure that we can get many more people in AISA who are representing the population in the country. However, we have a young graduates and scholars program in which quite a number of them are young women, young black women, and not only South Africans, it's women, and it's graduates both from South Africa and outside South Africa. I think part of what we are also doing, we are working with the North-South Council of Europe, and together with them, we, you know, are getting young people interested in research. There is an annual program that we have called the AISA Campus, working particularly with the University of Europe and a number of universities in the Northwest as well, looking at how we can get young people interested in research. I think just going through the applications for posts that we have advertised recently, including the one of the executive director of AISA, you will notice in that most of the people who have applied would be Africans, and most of them from the African continent, with long histories of publication. So there is a direct in this area, and it's not surprising in the South African context, and we need to find a way in terms of what one would call the production line to begin to interest young black people in research. I think there's also the issue of incentives. Pay that is given to remuneration and conditions of employment. Many people would rather go into the public service, and many people have applied. Those who have PhDs that have been in government and maybe would not have published. For some time, so I encourage people, even if they are not in academia, anymore to continue to publish. And part of what we need to do is to look at linkages the tertiary institutions and other research think tanks, both in South Africa across the continent, to see where we can find ways of getting young people involved in conferences, presenting papers at conferences, presenting papers for publication. And one of the interesting things about young graduates is that we tend to set up a channel for them to publish. So hopefully this will get them interested in this area of medicine. I think we must, yesterday we had a meeting with the Human Sciences Research Council, I think a database of people who will be useful for us. Part of what we're going to do is the people that apply to us is a post. See if they don't get their post, use, put them on a database, get them interested in some individual institutional members of AISA. It's only about 500 rands a year for institutions and 250 rands, which allows them to take part in our seminars and also receive our publications. So there's a number of ideas in this area that we're making. We also put a number of international players to begin to be members of the editorial board for the young scholars, general and renowned academics international. The issue of funding, AISA presently relies mainly on the parliamentary grant. We have begun to look at a number of other sources. A lot of money that we have received, we've received I think about 250,000 euros from GTZ. There's also another organization based in Senegal, Trust Africa. I think they're giving us about 500,000 rands for a major conference on Zimbabwe that will happen next year. Part of the looking at the new research agenda is to say to research that they have a responsibility to begin to look at sustained income as part of their performance management, and we're looking at that as an issue. There is no African government presently putting money into AISA. South Africa is on the African continent, so we could say it's one of our sources. We're trying to provide linkages with a number of research associations and think tanks on the African continent. There's Kodesria in Senegal, Austria in Ethiopia that we're looking at, working closely with and working with them to put projects to institutions and governments and others to develop capacity on the African continent. I think the issue of GIPSA, the undergraduates program, our internship programs, our contributions to capacity building in relation to GIPSA. But we also say, being an African institute, part of what we would like to do is not only work internally, because I would remember just yesterday, HSRC was launching their executive affairs internship program. So maybe we should be duplicating, and part of the way that we do, we're looking more to the African continent. And some of the researchers that we have actually are external examiners for a number of African universities, and we've said to them, we want to look at that program much more closely, and then how it would be a much more honest and passive program. I think the GFA, GFP debate was the result. So I'll not put my hands into that.
In terms of you know, developing, I mean, including women and incentivizing them, I think the CEO has covered most of what we're doing. But I think it's also relevant to say that of the 9 council members, actually 5 are women, and the chairperson of the audit committee is a woman. However, we want more researchers, of course, in the council. Let me just say from the council perspective, the debate of the GFP and foreign affairs, from a purely research mandate of AISA, I think the GFP can put the official line in terms of the communication with foreign affairs. But we did have a debate on this last year, not a very extended one when this came up. And I think, you know, I could probably talk on behalf of my 2 colleagues here from council that we had reservations about that, because we feel that research has to be above any kind of department which could be seen to be politically aligned and so on. So we feel that the integrity of the research, AISA's research, should not be to assist the policy of the Department of Foreign Affairs. While we may be positive towards the strategy of foreign affairs to Africa. We feel that our research should be independent, and we would be very concerned that the research mandate of AISA may be compromised if it's put under that particular department, under DSD, which has the mandate of research and research funds.
Thank you.
I wonder.
To comment on this last issue, I think it was a question of the Department of Science and Technology not being comfortable at a time with social sciences and humanities. And I think we have since woken up to the fact that the part of the sciences and we're starting to take it very seriously. And indeed, next picture will be presenting our 10-year plan, which has as one of the grand challenges humanities and social sciences. And therefore, the discussions around the possibility of AISA falling under DFT, I think, have become irrelevant. So AISA will continue, if you like, to report to the Ministry of Science and Technology in the future, and we hope that with the advent of the strategy on the humanities and social sciences that is underway, we will be able to chart a much more clearer future with regard to the research agenda for humanities and the social sciences. I hope that that answers.
There's a long answer.
There's
still under
the case.
I just want to add one point, if you allow me. AISA sees this as a great opportunity, what the department is now outlining in its new policy. Being mainly a social science institute, it is very much encouraged, the institute, by the new policy, and we would like to use that opportunity in the interaction with the department to see in what way we can, from our perspective and our own research program, because I think the research agenda is now under review exactly from this perspective. So we also see new opportunities arising from this.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm still not satisfied. This is the second year that I'm complaining about this very expensive year annual report. We've just had a report from the South African Council for National Scientific Professions. And this is their document. Very cheap one, but effective and what it should be. This one, 13% of the pages in the document are blank. Black pages there, black and white. Nothing in it. Extremely expensive. This is even here the last one. Complain. I think it's probably the third year that I'm saying you're wasting money and you're wasting taxpayers' money. That is just as far as the document is concerned. Once we start looking at what's inside, there's photographs of stuff all over the pages. We don't need the people from photographs, but I want to see them. We want to have your financial report like this other one we had this morning, where we are trying to help scientists in the country just to register. But looking further into this report, it seems to me that at times we are spending money, or this institution is spending money where it shouldn't be. It has publications on rape as a weapon of war. Now, I cannot see why we should have research done on that, but there it is. Then there are some of these that analysis of the performance against predetermined strategic objectives. They put objectives, but then one after the other, and I'm referring to page 17, for instance, target not met, target not met, target not met. So the institute is not doing what we think it should be doing. Coming to page 33 of the report, it seems to me we're paying for participation in conferences that's duplicated by other organizations. Let me refer to 455.1.10.
where Mr. Scolari participated in a discussion on South Africa's assistance in the Democratic Republic of Congo elections hosted by the Department of Foreign Affairs. The IEC of South Africa is becoming involved in this. Why do we have an institute duplicating what one of our departments are supposed to do, one of our structures in government on elections are supposed to be doing? So, if you go through these three pages, page 31 and 32 and 33, it seems to me this individual has been all over the world in participating and just having a worldwide visit. It sounds like a Minister of Foreign Affairs if you read the pages. And you know, I object to that kind of thing, sir, because they are making money available in the science and technology department for scientific research in South Africa. We need to get up to a high standard of science and technology in this country. And if we're going to spend money on AESA, then AESA must find another funding partner.
Point made, thank you very much. I didn't get any questions, but my comments are working. Let me take this for a moment and then come back to you.
Thank you, sir. I want to refer to Professor Peter Meyer's presentation. There was something that I saw in your presentation. I want to know, in terms of figures, how many local and foreign qualifications have you evaluated? Because you said you evaluated many, so maybe if you could give us a figure. The age distribution, I just want to know, in terms, you know, I'm constantly concerned about the youth and how do we use our human capital in terms of our youth. I'm wondering if we do compare positively with the world statistics in terms of our youth and how do we make our youth more enterprising in terms of science and technology. Also, in your presentation, you said that there was non-compliance of government departments. Could you please elaborate on that as well? Another thing that bothers me a bit is that you said that council members are not there because they are very busy people and they cannot opportunity to participate out of the. Is there some mandatory meetings roster that they need to attend? And if they don't comply, in terms of non-compliance, what are the repercussions? Because you could force them, or you could have a way that you could have council members with a commitment towards the organization. And that becomes something that perhaps could clarify me on that. I think there's a very important thing that we said about women and science, which my colleague Beatrice has brought up. I think I'm quite happy with those remarks. But I want to also allude to the fact that our CEO, in terms of AESA, I think it would be very unfair if we bombard you with everything that was done by your predecessors. But I think we need to have a forward-looking approach. Once we acknowledge all the challenges that many of my colleagues have alluded to, I would look at a positive projection as to how we're going to go forward. I would say, let us look at the causes of your downfall or your challenging situation where the AESA became a really sore thumb. How do we then exercise that courses in terms of studying those courses and then realize the symptomatic approach, and then how do we realize and move to a positive trajectory? So I want to ask you, sir, how would you build your brand? Because you have gone through a very difficult time, a turbulent time. And so you have to look at the damage control and now to rebuild the brand of AESA in order to make yourself compatible on the global level. Then I would ask you this question. How would you apply your mind to actually look at the black intelligentsia in terms of our think tanks? What collaboration do your future positive steps that you're going to take now to realize the objective, the true objectives of ISU. I think we have picked up in your report many flaws, control environmental flaws, non-compliance of PMFA, that we all have picked it up in your report. And also issues of aggressiveness and adequacy and so on. So perhaps we want to put you on a positive path to say, whilst we've acknowledged all these challenges, how do we try to rebuild your brand, and how do we now come to a stage where you become internationally competitive or internationally more integrated into all other sister bodies? That's my whole target key, to say that, to revive ourselves, to say, what collaboration plan do you have in terms of how we will be in the future? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to take this point as I've seen the portfolio end, what Mr. Farouk, Professor Mohammed has done. I'll see if I've got a minute left for the second time. I want us to be out of here in the next 20 minutes. The house is sitting at 12, so we don't have a large amount of time. So if you can be here by half past, we are requested to come and help for lunch at 1 in the old assembly. It was also for the day. Our guests can start enjoying their lunch, I think, from after in the old assembly. So I'm sure. Let me take a brief. Let's try to brief in our response as well, and so on. The President of the National Centers, you are ready.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The local versus foreign qualifications, I'm afraid I haven't got figures, but if I can, and I will try to be very brief, local qualifications are not assessed unless they're new. So the existing, if a candidate applies with a BSc honours degree from UCT, we don't assess it. It is just the candidate with his or her portfolio that's assessed. Qualifications assessed on new ones that the university's got to offer, and then if a foreigner would apply, a non-South African citizen with a qualification from outside the boundaries of South Africa. And most of those are from SADC countries, Southern Africa. And I'm really guessing, Honourable Chair, that there's probably about 20 to 30 a year. So it's not a huge percentage, but we do see from about 10, it's doubled, so it is still not a huge percentage. Youth involvement, we have no particular focus on youth either, I have to admit. This would be something that I think once the council has stabilized it, this would have to be an involvement. What we have worked on already is to try to make an awareness amongst graduates about universities, and we're going to ask council members that represent different parts of the country to visit the universities to speak to the young people when they're studying, to make the registration and other things known. So this is what we are planning. The members of council not attending committees, our problem is actually not so much the council members. They do attend the mandatory council meetings. It is the committees and subcommittees where we have practicing scientists that would have to assess new applications. And they tend to sit with them for 4 weeks and 6 weeks and 2 months, and people get rather agitated because their applications are not having a good turnaround time. This is really, Honourable Member, what the mention was. There is a ruling in our Act, council members don't attend 3 meetings, they get dismissed, and it has happened once, and the DST has appointed a new person in that person's place. So they have an obligation to attend, and the council members do. Then the government departments, as I mentioned earlier, I was just concerned that some government departments would hire scientists without checking that they are registered when they would do contracts for the government, for state tenders.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The question about brand brings to mind the Springboks, where they might have been a few years of wherever they are today. I think Jake White had a plan, he had support for the strategy moving forward. So I think those are just some of the lessons one may have to pick up. And AISA was formed in 1960, so there's a lot of history around it, both good and bad. I think as one tries to rebuild the brand, one would need to take that into account. I mean, one of the largest library offerings in Africa, which people may not know about. I
to about 70,000 documents, more documents. So I think we need to look in there and we need to see what we have and what did we have before that people found encouraging about us. So that's at one level. But I think there's a huge goodwill also outside. Part of what we have done in the few weeks that we have been there is to write to directors general of all departments, as well as ambassadors and heads of diplomatic missions. Many of them are people. There have been in relations. We are reviving something called ambassadorial fora where we get ambassadors and high commissioners to come and speak about the African policies and a number of issues going forward. Last week, Thursday, together with the chair of the council, we met the executive director of the United Nations Training and Research Institute. So I think there's goodwill out there. One, if you look at partners that we had, both on the continent in the diaspora, I think there's an excitement in some parts of the world, like the United States and Brooklyn, working together with us. I think from the side of publications as well, we could be strategic in working with African universities and other institutions who would have researchers but who may not have the opportunity to publish and the resources to publish on the African continent. So that's another area we need to also looking at partnerships. I think the Young Graduates Program for us, you know, has a lot of potential. Using it as a marketing tool out there, both in South Africa and outside. We met last week with a professor from the University of North Carolina who's working with us together with the Guggenheim Foundation to bring young black researchers into South Africa next year, March, and look at increasing their publications. So these are some of the things that we think moving forward we will be working on. Safe to say, DST has clarified the issue with foreign affairs. We met at DG last week, Wednesday. And they have also an interest in saying, but you know, as South Africa has this whole Africa agenda moving forward, you know, where can we come in? The presidency has asked us to review South Africa's 15 years on the African continent from 94. So I think some of the old partners are beginning to get confidence that indeed this can be these things which can be substituted. I think also certainly we are encouraged by the reaction from the portfolio committee, understanding our difficulties and challenges, but saying indeed that you know, they will not throw the baby out of the bathwater. When the chairperson says it was going to be hot in here, it was at the beginning that it was getting a bit cooler. We do not want to become complacent about that. I think the heat kept us going and we would have that opportunity to the heat of us. But certainly I think internally also just getting to understand the need for, you know, difficult controls and other people without cutting us questions and researchers. I think sometimes it's just a case of not just do the research, but all the PFA and other issues, because in a time not be the border around some of those. So I think it's going to be important. Why is the demo criticizes us for putting objectives and not reporting on them properly? I think those are all issues that we need to let people understand are necessary by the parliament as oversight of these issues and such to want us to report upon.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you very much. I don't doubt the need for the role of AIST in Africa. But the CEO mentioned something that sort of rang a few bells with me, and that related to the fact that this is an institution that has its history that goes back to 1961. And I'm just wondering whether, you know, the council as they stand at the moment, as a TOS, together with the science and technology, should not have a look and review this particular mission, vision, call it what you like, the strategic objective of the institute, so that we can actually see a way forward. Clearly, as I read through the report, and I don't know the institute all that well, it's the first time that I'm on this committee where you've actually presented your annual report, but other than the comments that have been made about the qualification, I really have a problem when I read through it, having listened to the Human Science Research Council present their review to this house, that clearly there seems to be some sort of duplication taking place here, both on the human science aspects and the social aspects and the political aspects of your roles and functions in Africa. As you might or might not know, they are also involved in a certain amount of initiatives on a cooperative basis. And when I see things like, you know, the aspect of HIV
aids and agricultural reviews in terms of that being undertaken, then I think to myself, well, hang on, is this sitting in the right, you know, department or in the right institute? And I really believe, you know, the councillors that are on this particular council need to go and look at those aspects to see if there's not a role of duplication taking place. Maybe look at setting new mandates in terms of where you as an institution should be going and what you should be achieving. And then clearly, you know, from a pure governance point of view, I believe that, you know, there is a responsibility on this council that's newly elected now and changes that are taking place to take a hold on this issue of how we're going to manage this organisation in view of this very damning report financially. There's got to be the checks and balances there, and the accountability of councillors on this functioning institution, this board, call it what you like, has certain responsibilities to the King Commission report and in terms of what it has to comply with in terms of the PFMSA. Now, there's no ability, and I think this is the important thing that I read here, despite my colleague's names, these sort of report that is transparent and open. But yet there's no relationship between what you intend to do as a strategic objective on the one hand that you can measure against the financial input on the other side or output on the other hand of the budget. And I think that is the most important key element that this report doesn't have. And that's the ability to be able to relate the checks and balances between what you're trying to achieve on the one hand. And never mind the, you know, the fact that a lot of those targets that you said were never achieved. The fact remains that there's no relationship between what you're trying to do physically and the actual expenditure on the other side of your budget, which I think is the most important thing that we need to do. That performance measurement in financial terms is not here. And the Auditor General has expressed that. And I think it comes back to the same question I put right up in the front. What are we doing as councillors now on this board, this institute, to try and review and to redirect this thing into the place that if we come and sit here next year, we're not going to have another damning report? I'll leave it there to my criteria.
Thank you very much. I think there's no specific question, but the issues are specifically raised for attention. And I can assure you, members, that we have to return to this chair soon. My thinking is that when we do our oversight, we will come and sit with the council from time to time. It just goes through some of these issues that we have here. And just also, before you meet with the Auditor General in February and March to do their interim review, we should also just engage you to just ensure that we are assisting to succeed. We're not going to wait until you come in and explain to us you graduated from disclaimer to
the council that you remove the number of members from the register yet again because they are not registered, and it's not because they're not competent, but in that legislation, from what I remember, because we had hangover fights with Marcy Pius over it, is that whether you, for example, an experienced mathematician with lots of publications, you come in as a candidate researcher, and they would estimate over time whether you should be admitted as a mathematician or whatever. Now that I found very objectionable, you see, it doesn't seem to make sense. If publications are accepted internationally, then why this kind of thing here? But you know, it seems to be so because at the end of the day, it's counter to remove the number of members from the registry yet again. I don't know how good those people were or were not. Was it because they did not comply with regulations? And I object to that kind of thing. But let me leave all that, you see. A matter came up somewhere, I'm not quite sure where, about borrowing loans to members. Now, can I say Parliament will give loans to staff members against their salaries, and Parliament will deduct monthly? There's no problem with this. Universities all over the place do that, but they are basically secured loans. Can I leave that? That's my main gripe about this. And I said, for example, in my own particular case, you cannot prevent me from publishing. I don't need to publish anything. A journal in South Africa, I can publish abroad, and you will not ask me any such questions. And it happens all the time. Let me leave that alone. Just be quick. The question about AISA. Well, I think the audit report is sufficiently clear that there are major problems. And people have highlighted this again. But if you look on page 108, and it says the entire top three tiers of management resigned during the year under review, giving rise to severe leadership vacuum. I really would like to know why those people all resigned just like that. The control environment, well, when it talks about the control environment, its work was severely compromised because there was no internal audit functioning. Now, I understand there must have been problems, but really that is just a little bit too much. Can I leave it at that?
Thank you, Professor. I'm going to just check what National Sciences do they have any information available on the removal. Maybe you can just respond to that. And probably you've made your points about publishing the letter that we would want to return to your field. Unless you want to make a comment now. The issue of the secured loans or loans and so on, I think we should study that as a closure for this to just get an understanding about this matter, so that there is no different views on this matter. So I'll leave that there. Thank you, Mr. Center.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The loans have nothing to do with our council, so I cannot respond. We have not given any loans to those staff members. The chair on removal of membership, I can assure this honorable committee that we do not in any light-hearted reaction to stroke of a pen remove members. They are individually followed up several times, and most of these are people that have retired and no longer want to practice, or who have left the country, or who have simply disappeared and don't pay their annual re-registration fees that we cannot follow up. We have a person in our office who is doing this as her entire task. She's our deputy clerk. She follows up every person who does not re-register. So they're all important to us. Our policy is one of inclusivity, and we'd like to have all members, all scientists in South Africa included. Very brief comment on the qualifications, Chair. To register or not register does not prohibit anybody from practicing his or her research results. This act has to do with practicing and advising members of the public on scientific issues, whether it's cleaning your swimming pool, that person is qualified to do that, and it is not to publish. You can publish any work anywhere, South Africa or internationally, without being registered. In fact, academics do not have to be registered unless they want to practice in a private capacity. Then they need to be, or if they want to sign a report that would have certain scientific inferences in it, then they have to register. So we really have a total policy of inclusivity, and we'd like to get everybody on board and not to prevent people from practicing their work.
Thank you very much. On the resignation, we'll come back to you on that. I think you've covered that in the earlier statements. When we do what's happening, we want to return just for the end of the term, which is other matters, just interrogate a little further on this question. And then take, who was this? Mr. Nandu? Hello, you can ask.
I've been summarized by Honorable Mandobo and Honorable Mafari on the issue of ISA coming back to DSP. But I must say that I'm surprised that coming back as well was done ahead of the assessment, you know, that the report was about. The impact assessment or even the relevance of the setup, because I would have thought that actually that would determine, you know, whether ISA comes back to DST or not. treatment, leading to swing for money and those kinds of stuff. But I would recommend that at least for next budget, as we have quality sales chain, it might be necessary that DST and this committee should put their head together and revisit this issue of Python, because it has supported us for more than 2 years now that they have quality sales. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and my apologies. For some reason, I told you we were meeting in G3 and I had the time there until I had to find this day. When I looked at my phone again, I realized it's at 26. Anyway, thank you very much. Okay, just on the SATNAS report, slide 10, registration tab. To collect that steady increase over the last 4 years, the relatively few registered black and female cancer, etc. Slide number 17, bullet number 3 says academics are negative about registration. In light of the response that's been given to Professor Mohammed's question about the need to register or not, if you say that the negative perception among academics about this registration, what is it that you've done to check exactly what it is that makes them uncomfortable about that? Do they feel that there's no need to do that, or whatever? Because there will be no point in having legislation that you cannot enforce. And if you could just respond to that. On AESA, first of all, to say I think many of my colleagues have already pointed out quite huge gaps or press witnesses in the report, especially with regard to the audited financial statements. But while it says that the Auditor General has issued a disclaimer and we are given reasons there, we are not told how exactly AESA is going to turn the corner. Immediately thereafter, we just write achievements. Now, there's a difference between a disclaimer and a qualification. You may have an unqualified report with emphasis of matter and so forth. But just how are you going to graduate from a disclaimer to an unqualified report, despite the promise we are making here? How is that going to happen? Lastly, how long is this going to go on the program to ensure that there are young people that are researchers? I think it's called AYGS. Quite a lot of a program it is. But is it something that is part and parcel, is built into AESA as one of the units, or is it just something that is ephemeral and it's going to end at some point?
Thank you very much. Natural sciences, want to respond to that?
Honorable Chair, thank you. I will try to be brief. The negative perception really comes from the academics, as was mentioned. Our concern there is that they influence future scientists. That is really what it means. An academic does not need to register, as I said before. What have we done about it? We have established a Dean's Forum, where we now meet regularly with deans of faculties of science, where we have open discussions about this and need for registration as well, and we hope to have a roadshow soon to visit the universities. They believe, Honorable Chair, that it is important for an engineer to register because he's going to build a bridge and the members of the public are going to drive over to sit in a building. But some of them don't see the point that a scientist can have the same effect. And we have some disciplinary cases of an agricultural scientist in the Nelspruit area advised two farmers on what herbicides to use, and it cost them their farms. They lost their entire crop and they went bankrupt. They need to protect it, against an incompetent person. A geologist filed a report on a mine that was full of gold and somebody bought it and there was nothing. And it was a bad report, an incompetent report. So there is a need, we believe, for registration, but some of our academic colleagues don't seem to think so.
And we couldn't give out the achievements, but I think from where it was meant was our governance structure going forward. All that begins to talk about how we're going to try and deal with these issues. Appointment of internal auditors and audits, recovery plan, monthly audit meetings, performance management, are just enough feeling in a post, are just part of the strategy moving forward, trying to bring ourselves back on an even keel. Secondly, the Aisa young graduate is being incorporated into our capacity building programs moving forward. So,
thank you very much. Mr. Aisa, what would be your mother's question?
You can put a sentence there. Okay. My question starts low, and I'm sticking to that question, because the report speaks of a list of
Sorry.
I'm sticking to my question of staff loans. It's not the one individual. The report speaks of a list of staff loans without supporting documentation. That's the first one. The second is I want to know if there's a problem with attendance at council meetings. There certainly was with the old council. There may have been occasions, at least one occasion, with the old council when you could not have been for it. So I want to know with the new council, are there any problems in that regard? And also, regarding the new council, it would be very nice, I think, if the minister. The minister, in fact, alerted us to when he makes these appointments. It's been quite newsworthy to me the last week or two that we appointed a new council. I was unaware of it. It would be very useful if the minister informed us of these appointments and maybe with a little autobiographical sketch of who the appointees are. Thanks.
Thank you very much. The minister's office extends to this meeting.
Before choosing to be part of it. I think that is something which I need to say, you know, to the honorable member. Many of them knew that Aisa was in a certain state. I sat in the organized a lot, before I accepted being chairperson. So we made it very clear what it is they were going in for, and therefore we looked for the sort of people that we thought would have a commitment, you know, to Aisa in the broader sense and see beyond the current problem. So in short, chairperson, the people who never attended are no longer part of Aisa. We identified them. I as the chairperson actually told the minister, if certain people are still in this council, I would not be chairperson. So we have very good people. We don't have a problem of attendance. We do have in the policy that starts that if you do miss three consecutive meetings, then you fall out. So we don't have a problem of attendance. We have council members who are working extremely hard. We have a general strategy which Dr. Maslow has signed on to as part of his contract, you know, just to answer the last question. And we are working extremely hard. I will not be here next year. I want to, you know, to indicate honorable members with a disclaimer.
Members, the bells are ringing. We have to return to a particular Aisa early in the year. And by then we hope that we have appointed your case for the letter of research. Secondly, the issue of the young individuals program, we want to engage on that further just to see if we can find what we can do to make it a success as well. We're going to engage on the question of staff roles as well, just to ensure that it doesn't happen again, like the same, and then just to say that it's got no more than one month, is that something to cover and things like that. We'll come back to more about that. I think the other methods are raised that we should be able to discuss with you and the DSP, just to engage you and just look into how we get together before. I want to thank you very much. I don't know if they put a Mato, Dr. Mato, thanks. Nice to see you again here. The last time I saw you was.